everybody. I'm Shaney.
And I'm Bailey.
And we're here with America's Sweethearts.
You didn't tell me.
I was trying something new.
You should have pointed at me to take it away. Okay. We explore women in film through their catalog, and we go by genre.
Ta-da. Yes, we pick random categories, which is action, adventure, thriller, rom-com, comedy, fantasy, sci-fi, horror, family, and drama. We pick those at random, and then we choose whichever movie we want to cover.
And you did that all off the top of your head.
Yeah, I don't have it written down right in front of me.
No, that would be cheating.
For the past episodes, we have covered Erin Brockovich and Hook from our this month's America Sweetheart, Julia Roberts.
Mm-hmm. And it's your turn to pick.
Yes, it is my turn to pick. And I have the movie playing in the background just so I can really feel in the moment with it. And the category was thriller. So I picked the psychological thriller, Sleeping with the Enemy. This was the first time you've ever seen this movie, right, Bailey?
Yes, it is. I'd never seen it before.
Overall thoughts. Did you like it? Do you want to wait?
I have a lot of thoughts and opinions on this. I will say I enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed Julia Roberts' performance in it.
Yeah, she's so great, and she's only 22 in this.
That's so wild. And that makes sense, considering that she's, what, 23 in Hook?
Yeah.
The year before.
Yeah, it's early on in her career. So we're going to try to talk about some fun facts about the film and about what Julia was going through at that time in her life. But first, since this is a movie about domestic violence, I do want to just say a little something about that and say that this movie is hard to watch for that reason alone.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing, especially while we're in this quarantine, I've heard so many stories about women who are stuck at home in
with
these violent situations.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I just wanted to provide the domestic violence hotline, which is 1-800-799-7233. And if you are in a situation that you don't think that you can get out of, you're not alone. And you do have people behind you supporting you. And the number again is 1-800-799-7233. Sleeping with the Enemy is an adaptation of a novel by Nancy Price. Julia Roberts saw the script and she called the producer to say, "Hey, I would like to have this part." And the producer at the time was like, "No, we actually already have someone for it, but we will keep you in mind for another future project."
Who was it?
Kim Basinger.
No, wow.
I know.
Crazy.
Can you imagine? It would be a completely different movie.
Completely different. Yeah.
So she actually dropped out to do some other film. Doesn't really matter. Because our starlet got the part.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm not a great researcher, as I've mentioned in the past. So I'm going to do my best to just naturally bring these up in a very just conversational way.
But you're still going to cover your 5-point criteria.
I'm certainly going to try. I mean, I've already put in a few facts.
Yeah.
Just trying to be natural about
it. You did it.
That being said, I did find these all on the internet. It does not come from my brain. So copywriting, plagiarism, I don't know.
There aren't a lot of facts that can come from someone's brain.
I'm just...
Unless it's a scientist that's dissecting it.
I'm trying my best here. Thank you for the internet and giving me information. So when she did this film, when she was 22, it was shot in the spring of 1990, and she became the youngest actress to earn a 7-figure for a single performance. And, I mean, that's at the age of 22.
Wow.
That's insane. Insane. And this movie did not really get great reviews. I mean, we're going to talk about the movie later on, but this movie had a lot of mixed reviews. Mostly the mixed was Julia was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The movie was not.
Okay. Okay.
They said it was very predictable, and the jump scare at the end was just stealing from Halloween and Friday the 13th and any other the bad guy is dead, but he comes back to life scenario.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's just getting a little tired. It's getting a little old. And I mean, I get it, but I love a psychological thriller.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't have to have a thorough plot. You can have some holes. I really don't care. As long as I'm entertained. And yeah, I was entertained.
It's entertaining. Especially, I mean, I will get into it, I'm sure, as we're talking about the movie itself. But I agree with a lot of the critical responses that you're just communicating.
Well, that's funny because the public didn't really agree with the critics.
No?
No.
I think Julia Roberts really carries the movie because she's just so charming.
Exactly. The movie was made for $20 million and ended up bringing in $175 million. And the critics didn't really understand why, except for the fact of Julia.
She's magic. And
she is magic. And a lot of the critics that I read about basically said it didn't matter whether she did a good job because she's just so magnetic.
Absolutely. I think I said that in one of our other episodes, that she's so magnetic.
One thing that I did find when I was doing the research about the critics is that because all of them thought that it was just her magnetism that brought the audiences in, that put her on a playing field with like Mel Gibson and Tom Cruise and Kevin Costner. Those were the big men in that time, and it didn't matter what they did, their name was what brought people in.
Yeah.
And Julia Roberts was the only female in that time to do that. And she was 22.
Yeah.
I just can't get over that. So that's all that I want to do right now for research.
Okay.
There's some quotes that she has later, but I want to do that towards the end.
Okay.
So let's just jump right into this movie.
Great. I'm really excited.
Okay, well, where would you like to begin?
Well, let's begin at the beginning.
I hear that's a wonderful place to start.
Yeah, it's predictable, but you know, oldies are goodies.
Well, just like this movie, apparently.
Well, yes, I did find it pretty predictable. And I know that you're very good at predicting movies. And often, even if a movie is pretty predictable, I'm just not paying attention to that while I'm watching a movie. But I caught myself many times thinking, oh, he's going to step on glass right now. I mean, it was just like I could see those things happening because of the way that had been set up.
Yeah.
But... And never having seen this before, I didn't know anything about it other than it's called Sleeping with the Enemy. And I thought it was going to be like spy subterfuge kind of movie,
mm-hmm.
You know, like that's kind of what I was expecting. So when we started on a beach with Julia Roberts digging up clams, I was just like, okay, so what's happening? And a man in a suit walks up to her and he's like, we're going to go to a party. Oh, but you've been working on clams. I'm so sorry. And she says, I can dig up more tomorrow. I didn't sense anything strange about that until she stood up to kiss him. And if there's anything that I know about Julie Roberts is she's pretty good at on-screen kisses. And that felt like it was just really uncomfortable.
No chemistry.
Absolutely no.
A little resentment.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought, well, she was young. Maybe she just didn't get it this time because I still didn't understand where this was going because I had been like paying hyper aware to that. You know, then he comes in. He's like, is that the dress you're wearing? And he's like, oh, I was thinking the black one. She's like, it might get cold. And the next thing is a cut too. And she's wearing that black dress because that's what he wanted. And I was like, oh, I don't like where this is going. I still didn't understand what it was going to be about. But I thought maybe it was just some kind of passive sexism that we weren't really supposed to pick up on because it's the early 90s. And then she goes.
No, very intentional.
Oh, yeah. Well, then she goes to him and says, have I done enough socializing? And I'm like, why is she asking him that? Like, why can't she just go up to him and say, I'm ready to go home? Then there was that really awkward montage sequence of him working out.
Yes.
Where they show his leg, and then they show his armpit hair. And then they show Julia Roberts walking around the corner, kind of looking. And then you see him from the back, and then they have a close-up shot on his face that lingers way too long. I was like, this is bizarre.
It was showing his intensity.
Yes. And, oh, sorry. backtrack a little bit. I miss one step. They come home from the party and she goes to get strawberries and he puts on a disc, which I wasn't paying attention what that was at the time. He just grabs her from behind and it's a sex scene. And it's just like, what? She was going to eat strawberries. And then I was like, well, I guess it's their relationship. Cause like, you know, at that time she seemed receptive to it. So like, I was getting mad about these things, but I didn't realize that I was supposed to be mad about these things.
Right.
Do you know anything about Berlioz?
I do not. This is probably the only song that I know about that person.
When I heard that, I was like, this is a funny song that they're playing while there's the sex scene happening. So this is not romantic music.
No.
And I was like, the first thing that came to mind was The Shining. Because that song is heavily featured in The Shining.
Is it really?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. I can hear it. I can hear it. Weird.
Yeah. And I know that I wasn't supposed to do any research for this, but I figured
you can't help yourself. You gotta stay true to you.
I thought you might not look into Berlioz.
You know what? I thought about it and then I thought, you know, if I can't pronounce his name, then I'm just going to ignore it.
Well, Symphony Fantastique, the part that they're playing, they don't actually say this in the movie, but it's the fifth movement of that symphony. And it's called, listen to this, it's called Dream of a Witch's Sabbath.
Whew, that puts me in the mood.
Yeah, and Berlioz was like early romantic period. So this was written as a program music where they hand out a program with some like words on it to tell you what the music was supposed to evoke. So It's like your imagination is supposed to take you there, but it kind of helps you along saying that this is the story. And now you take it from there. And so the story of the whole thing was about Berlioz falling in love with this woman who the love went unrequited. So he takes a bunch of opium and has this dream that he kills his love and then is sent to a scaffold to be hung. He's present at his own funeral. All these monsters start showing up. And that's the piece that they're having sex to.
Wow.
I know. So I'm like, what is going through this man's head that this is the song that he obsessively has sex to?
It's disturbing to say the least.
Right. So it was the towels that he looked at the towels and I was like, oh, he's going to get mad that those aren't straight. Mm-hmm. Even though like he hadn't done anything that would make me think he was going to hit her. Mm-hmm. But I saw that and I was like, oh, he's going to be mad about the towels. And then sure enough, oh, okay. All these things I've been noticing, there was a reason for them.
Well, and he was not really mad about the towels. He was very forgiving about the towels in a very manipulative way.
Right. I guess that's not when he hit her.
No.
But it was that point where I was like, okay, I see where this man is.
And apparently this actor, he played the stepfather in the movie The Stepfather.
Oh. Okay.
So he was very much playing a type. And the director of this movie also directed The Stepfather. So people were expecting, because that movie had such high acclaim, they were expecting this movie to be the same caliber. And it did not evidently have the same nuance that The Stepfather did. I haven't seen that one. I thought I saw one, but it's not the same actor. So maybe that movie has been made a few times. Again, this is one of the things I could probably do in research, but I'd rather just watch this movie and not do that.
Oh, one thing that made me so angry. No, this was after he hit her and he brought roses and he goes, I'm sorry we quarreled.
What was their quarrel about? I don't even remember. After he hit her?
This is after he hit her.
Yeah, it was because the doctor had seen her on their balcony and he thought that she was deliberately trying to humiliate him. So he hit her and then brought the flowers and was like, I'm sorry we quarreled. Because that's what happened. That's what a quarrel is.
Yeah, it diminishes her experience.
Absolutely.
It's a form of gaslighting. I mean, like to hit her and then call it a quarrel.
Mm-hmm.
Because that implies that she was a participant in that and it was an exchange. And that's not, she was a victim of him.
Right. But to him, she was just as much at fault. It was her fault that he had to hit her. and therefore it was a quarrel to him. And that just speaks to the mindset of at least him as an abuser.
Yeah, he's apologizing, but he's not taking responsibility for what happened because he doesn't call it what it is. He doesn't say, I'm sorry I hit you.
Right, no, it's her fault that he acted that way. So moving on, let's talk about her escape.
Okay.
What did you think about her escape?
Well, I knew that she didn't drown because the movie had just started.
Right.
So, you know, he says she can't swim. I was like, she's been keeping a secret. But the way that she had planned it, because like I was wondering why she was breaking those light bulbs.
Mm-hmm. I did like that moment when it shows her in the water and she has that voiceover monologue and she was like, and the lack of lights showed me the way home.
Yeah. A beacon of unbroken lights or something like that. Yes, it was very poetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. Although at the time, like when I was watching it as a first time view, I thought, why is she flushing her ring?
Ugh, that part kills me. I've thought about that moment several times because it's easy to blame her for, you know, the undoing of this whole situation. She put the ring in the toilet. She didn't make sure that it was flushed. And it was because of the ring that he found her, or that he got an idea that she was still alive. But I started thinking of the mindset of her.
Yeah, she probably wasn't thinking straight.
She probably wasn't thinking straight, but also I can't imagine having a symbol on my body saying that I am someone's property.
Mm-hmm. Someone's possession.
I would want that off as soon as possible, too. I wouldn't want that around me. I wouldn't want to put it in my bag to throw away later. I would want it gone.
Right.
I totally understand it.
It belongs in the toilet, for sure.
It belongs in the toilet. I just wish she checked to see if it flushed.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
Yeah, well, it's just my thought, you know, like I said, certain things were pretty predictable. But I was like, that is not going to get pushed down the pipes. There's a very good chance it's just going to sit there. And it did. But I don't think, I don't agree that was the thing that clued him in. It was that dumb working at the YMCA.
Yes. Yes, and we will talk about Miss Gymnastics. But first, I do want to talk about that ring just a little bit more.
Okay.
Because,
okay.
Well, one, I did read that a critic was like, there were all these plot holes, like the ring didn't go down the toilet. And it made me think, you know, how long did no one flush that toilet? And I just want to address that because when she's quote unquote dead and he goes back to the house, my guess is this is not their living house. This is just a vacation home.
Oh,
because when he goes back to the house to look for clues, the bed is stripped. There's sheets all over the furniture.
Oh.
So my guess is after she died, he never stayed there anymore.
Okay. I thought it was because it was a very wealthy person's house. And sometimes people have separate toilets.
I mean, that could be it too. I don't see it as a plot hole. I can see devices put in the movie to explain it. But the thing I want to talk about is it takes her 5 to 10 seconds to squeeze that ring off of her hand. It is like attached to her hand. Mm-hmm. But then,
because she couldn't get away.
I get it. I get the symbolism of it. However, when he finds it in the toilet, he then slips it on with ease on his little
his
finger. So either he has teeny tiny pinkies or she has ginormous ring fingers.
Also, he didn't wash it before putting it on his finger.
He also stuck his bloody hand in that toilet.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh my gosh. Oh, gross. So,
there's a lot happening in that scene. But anyway, we've talked about her long arms and her long legs. So maybe she has giant hands.
Maybe. Remember, you know, when she was reaching for the dead frog in the water.
In Aaron Brockovich.
Yeah. And, you know, and I said, like, if she doesn't have enough length, she can just extend her fingers.
Anyway, Yeah, I just found that really, really funny. And I also, I didn't understand why, this to me was a little bit of a plot hole. Why did she cut her hair in the bathroom? Because I've cut my hair before in a bathroom and it gets everywhere.
Yeah, I thought about that too when she flushed that down the toilet. I was like, she better make sure that all of that flushes because that has a tendency to just float to the top.
Yeah, well, and then there's going to be hair clippings all over the floor. It did not seem realistic that she would do that then, especially since she was going to put a wig on anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you put a wig on, you can mash all your hair underneath it.
I mean, she did have a lot, so maybe she had to cut it in order to fit it under the wig.
Giant bangs.
Yeah. Okay, so she's escaped. She's on the bus. She meets that nice old lady.
With only green apples.
Those were the palest green apples I've ever seen in my life.
I hadn't thought about that.
Like, if a green apple could be sick, that's what it looked like.
I just really liked the sound of them crunching into the apples. It's like, that's some ASMR right there.
I did love the exchange between them. You know, she's pretending that it's her friend that's going through this.
And then she changes pronouns.
And the woman's like, she's brave. And she says she thinks she's a coward. And the old woman said, a girl like that? No, she's brave. And it's just, I think, what she needs to really know that this was the right decision.
Well, then the lady says, how long? 3 years. And I think it's pretty obvious to both of them that she's talking about herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 3 years, 8 months, 6 days or something like that. When it gets a little too many details, and you're like, oh. Yeah,
a little too personal.
Oh, that's you.
So she gets to this town in Iowa.
She gets to this town in Iowa. Okay. Let's talk about the neighbor. You first see him singing a song from, what is it called? The Jet song.
West Side Story. When you're a jet, you're whatever.
He's dancing around with the hose. And and I know that they don't really look alike, but since the first time I've seen this movie, he, to me, is Richard Marx.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Because when I was watching him, I kept thinking that he looked like some rock star from the 80s.
Richard Marx. It's the hair, I think.
Yeah, well, he's very hairy.
He's very hairy.
I mean, all over.
The first time they meet, he is so creepy.
Yes.
He's so creepy. He steps up to her in the dark, approaches her. She has all of these apples in her dress, and, like, he touches the dress and gets really close. I'm like, dude, that's not okay. Yeah. It's not okay. And then she, of course, drops the apples and goes inside. And then the next time you see him, he's leaning up against the door frame and it's like, I'm sorry if I scared you. I'm like, you're scaring me again. Go away.
Just approach her again in the daylight from a reasonable distance.
Yes.
Wave at her over the fence. Something like that. Or just mind your own business.
Word to the wise gentleman, approaching a woman while she's alone at night, probably not the best time to go and talk to her.
Yeah.
Just not the best. If it's meant to be, there will be other opportunities, I promise.
So the house that she moves into, the rent is $700 a month.
Yes.
For that giant house. All I could think was, because, you know, she seems pretty happy while she's painting the cabinets and, you know, doing all that stuff because she's free. But all I can think is, I would not feel safe.
No.
In a big house like that.
No.
And I think that's, like, part of the things that I had issues with that just didn't feel real to me, was that it felt like it was a man's interpretation of what a woman would go through if she went through this situation. Because some of these things, like, just didn't feel right to me. Like the fact that she moved into this giant house and was okay with it until the man stopped her from picking his apples.
Yeah, it became more obvious to me towards the end when all the creepy stuff starts happening that I'm like, why is she in that giant house? But at the same time, she's probably used to a lot of big spaces. because they are so rich. They have a mansion on the beach. So I can only imagine what their actual house is. So maybe she's used to that kind of space.
That's fair. But at least like when she was living in that giant house, she knew where the monster was. And now she's in this house. And I know both you and I have issues with being alone in a house. I've lived in a house that was broken into, and the situation was really scary. I mean, even before then, I was checking all the rooms and closets and cabinets, but even doubly so now that that has actually happened.
I mean, I lived in a townhouse that had bars on it on every single entrance to the house, and I would still check everything. But then again, the attics were connected between all of the units, and there was mm-hmm. some weird things.
That's very creepy.
Yeah.
Well, and Grandma, who lived in there before you, also thought that she heard someone moving around upstairs.
Yeah. I mean, I told you that one time I came home and where the attic drawstring was, I guess the attic entry, there were leaves on the ground under it.
Yeah.
And that only happens when you pull the ladder down. I don't go into that attic. And I also found leaves in my bed. It could have been something that can be explained, but I have a hard time thinking that it's something that I did. So,
I mean, I've told you my experience, right?
No.
Well, okay. So I lived in this teeny tiny house in Austin, Texas, on a street called Hollywood. And I lived there with two other roommates, and I came home later. He called me. He says, "Have you been home yet?" And I said, "No, I haven't." He's like, "Well, our house was broken into." I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" This is what happened. Our roommate used to work in front of a window in the kitchen every day. And she would open the window to have air come through while she was working. And so that would be the only window that was left unlocked. And whoever came into the house took the screen off only that window and went inside, opened all of the drawers in the kitchen, took out a butcher's knife, and went to every single room, turned the lights on in every single room, left the knife on bed, who was the only man in the house, and then went to my room and took my backpack and dumped a whole bunch of stuff out of it, and then went to his room and rummaged through all of her stuff, and she couldn't tell that anything valuable was taken, except that they stole her dildo and left an unopened box of condoms on her bed that no one could account for, and then took her bicycle and went out the front door.
I'm sorry, what's the message there? You need a man, not a toy?
I think that it was someone that was watching her while she was working. And I think it was a message of escalation.
But y'all have moved, right?
Yes, I don't live there anymore.
I mean, there's so much wrong with that story. Nope, it's a big old nope.
So anyway, I guess, like, you know, she's made of harder stuff than either of us.
Well, but at this point in the story, she does not think that he's onto her. And also, you know, the 90s were a different time. People left their doors unlocked. They left windows open at night, especially in small towns. You know.
Yeah, but she's afraid someone's going to find her.
Yes, but she, like, even when she goes to see her mom, she's like, "I don't think he's onto me." He might be, but I don't think he is. She's being careful, but she's not letting that dictate her way of life. Which, I mean, I lock the doors and I lock the windows, and I think that it's silly not to, but who knows? Maybe she does not have AC in that house and she needs those windows open.
And they don't have mosquitoes there.
Yeah. Let's just say that she just needs some fresh air.
Hey, why did you pause it?
Potty break.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Enjoying Two Sisters Present America's Sweethearts? Feel free to leave us a review.
Tell us what you love.
And if you must, tell us what you don't love.
I don't love mayonnaise.
I mean about the podcast.
Right.
Contact us through Twitter, Instagram, or email.
Find our handles on our website, www.twosisterspresent.com.
You can also join our Patreon with exclusive content and access for picking your own movie or artist for us to cover.
What? You can pick the next America's Sweetheart?
Sure can. Find out all the info at www.patreon.com/twosisterspresent.
Thank you and goodbye.
Later. All right, I'm back. I'm ready. Let's go.
Before we push play, there's one more thing we need to say.
Ooh, enlighten me.
We need to give a shout out to two very special people who have helped make this podcast possible.
Ooh, I know. Mm-hmm. Do-do-do-do.
Drum roll, if you please. Brrr. Our logo designer, Angela Panina, and the music from Colin Moore.
Oh, Angela is also an amazing baker, by the way, if you didn't know that, Bailey. Mm-mm. She has made me some gluten-free churro cupcakes to die for. Mm. And if anybody wants to discover just how heavenly these churro cupcakes are,
nice.
You can find Angela at Angelic Confections on Facebook or at Angelic Confections HTX on Instagram. So that's Angelic Confections, Houston, Texas, but HTX.
Churro cupcakes sound amazing.
Oh, Bailey, you don't even know. I could live in that icing. It's so good.
You can also find more of Cullen's music on Spotify. He recently released his first plaid tuxedo album, Soaring Through the Wind.
I listen to it almost daily. Hashtag no regrets.
Anyway, you guys are awesome. Ready?
Oh, super ready.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, now I would like to talk a little bit about gymnastic woman, gymnastics yes. lady.
Okay.
Oh, this woman. This lady, this random lady calls the husband and wants to express her condolences for the loss of Laura. And she goes on about the YMCA. And you know what? That's fine. She didn't know that Laura was keeping the YMCA or YWCA as they say in the show, I think, instead of just leaving it at that, because, you know, you honestly didn't know. She then goes on, oh, but she's the one that took gymnastics, right? No, she didn't take gymnastics. Oh, that's odd. Oh, that's how she said she got all these bruises. What yeah. a dumbo.
Yes. I mean, like, even if she had believed that up until that point, like, while she's having that conversation, she should have had a realization. I mean, I shouldn't say should. You would think that she might have.
Yes.
You know, gotten to a point where she was like, oh man, that must be why she said that, and just kept that to herself.
Well, there's honestly no reason to bring up the bruises at all. It did not matter.
No, it was very contrived dialogue.
Yes. And it's probably my least favorite part about the movie, because I don't believe that this is a real human. No one.
No, it was a woman that actually really hated Laura.
I can't with that character. I don't know whether she has a name. I didn't check the credits, but gymnastics lady, go to bed. Just go to bed.
Go to bed.
Sleep it off. Try again tomorrow. Try again tomorrow. Okay, so she's building this relationship with this theater guy, and he's a director at a college. And as beautiful as that scene is where he takes her into the theater and that swing comes down and the snow falls.
All I was thinking was, is he going to clean that?
Exactly. So my friends had to do snow on the stage every day, every single day. Well, they did it, I think, 3 times a day. They were like, I cannot do this cleanup again. It is the worst decision ever. And Why is this a thing in theater? Why do people do this? Especially when there's no purpose, when there's no audience. Why would you do that to yourself? Unless he's leaving it for the custodians to do or for his students to do the next day. And that's just mean.
No, that's unethical.
Yes.
I mean, that was my thought. I was like, who's going to clean that? And what a waste of resources. Those were the two things that I thought of.
They sweep it up and then they put it back into the contraption up in the catwalk. But
they did that? I guess I missed that.
No, not in this movie. I'm saying in general. So it's not a waste of resources because they just use the same resources. But
even if they sweep up cockroaches with it? Ew.
There shouldn't be any cockroaches on stage if you're sweeping it every
day. You never know. They die anywhere.
Okay, well, maybe they don't. Maybe it is a waste of resources, Bailey. I don't know.
Well, maybe they don't have cockroaches there. Oh. They don't have mosquitoes.
He's about to stick his hand in the toilet. I have the movie playing in the background just to help. And oh, there it is.
Okay, so I know this is another movie. But I think I told you, I watched that movie. It was called Working Girl.
Oh, yeah. With Melanie Griffith.
Sigourney Weaver. Yeah. I loved it. But it is a great portrait of sexism in the workplace in the 80s.
Oh, absolutely.
Be a fun one to just pick apart. Yes. But there's a part where Harrison Ford, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford goes into the bathroom. They go into the bathroom together and a bride walks in and starts talking to Melanie Griffith. Mm-hmm. And then the bride is like, "Who are you?" And that's when Harrison Ford walks out of the stall and he's like, he makes some kind of excuses or whatever. And then because he starts walking out with Melanie Griffith from the bathroom without washing his hands. And I'm thinking like he's not washing his hands at right before he walks out the door. He sticks one finger into his mouth, into the side of his cheek and goes. Ew. I was like, oh my gosh. I know he didn't actually use the bathroom in there, but we're supposed to believe he did.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love things in movies like that. Yeah, where is that intentional? Did you intentionally not want him to wash his hand and then stick his finger in his mouth? Did you intentionally want his bloodied hand in the toilet bowl? I mean, I don't understand whether it's a choice or just a oops, didn't think about how disgusting that is.
Or he's just driven by his madness.
Maybe. Maybe.
He does not have a brain that works correctly.
I guess.
He's obsessive.
Absolutely he is. I mean, there's a lot of moments in this movie where you're like, okay, you are not a normal person. Your brain does not function the way that it should. So maybe that is one of those moments. Maybe it was intentional just to be like, oh, yeah, he does not think right. Going back to the theater scene, yes. The montage of Brown Eyed Girl.
Oh, yes. I wanted to say, for some reason, I picked up on a lot of the music in this movie. And that was one, as soon as Brown Eyed Girl came on, I'm like, oh, we're in for a montage. Like, I knew it.
And it was quite the montage.
It's very cute.
I think it was Hook. We talked about how Julia does not necessarily look young. She looks very mature. And I think part of that is she carries herself with such maturity as well.
Uh-huh.
But what I love so much about that montage is you can see her age. You can see that she is a 22-year-old, especially when she has those clown pants on and is juggling. I'm like, oh, there she is. There's the girl.
Yeah. And then like when you know, he's chasing her around and she's laughing.
It's so beautiful. Oh my gosh.
Yes. There is a lot of joy in that. That seems very genuine.
Yeah. And I feel like she finally gets to just be a free 22-year-old instead of taking on the weight of, you know, the abuse and the weight of just the seriousness of the movie as Julia Roberts herself, as opposed to the character. And it's just really nice to see that levity and getting to see her have that youthful innocence for a little bit. Also, the mask, the mask that she wears, and she's like licking the lips of it. It's really disturbing. Yeah.
But then right after, it's followed by a dance sequence to Run Around Sue.
Yes.
Which I was like, well, this was very intentionally picked.
A little on the nose.
Because here's this very abusive husband that's imagining all these indiscretions that his wife is taking part in. And then here is this other guy who is just dancing just for fun to a song of a woman who's free to love whoever she wants.
Yep.
Very stark differences there. I think it was meant to drive it home.
Yeah. Okay, so she plays dress up. She dances around. It's really nice. And then let's go to where she finally gets to see her mom. And
hush, little baby, don't say a word.
Yeah, Mockingbird is apparently their mother-daughter lullaby.
Yeah, what? Her mom's singing it while she's crocheting as well, while she's all alone. Like, it's the only song she knows. She's never listened to a radio.
If it brings her joy, Bailey, let her have it, okay?
She's not going to be humming Run Around Sue to crocheting whatever she's working on.
Okay, her crocheting while she's singing that song, and then she drops her needle, and then husband is there just watching her like a creep, and then she's blind, so she's struggling to find the needle, and he's just standing there watching. I'm like,
creepo.
You're not a human. You're not a human. I
fully expected her to sense that he was there. To be like, hello, is anyone there?
No, she was humming too loud. She couldn't hear the footsteps.
She was in crochet mode.
So Julia goes to visit her. She puts on this man costume with the mustache and the wig. And they even put some shadow on her jawline for the 5 o'clock shadow. She's really cute. I love her as a man.
Yes, she's adorable.
She's adorable. Also, she drinks out of a water fountain like a normal human.
Not like this.
Unlike her husband who... is he a fish? I don't... That was the weirdest thing to watch.
It was like he was jutting out his lower lip to gather up water as it was spewing.
It's like how, you know, dogs curl their tongue under to like scoop water into their mouths.
Yeah, that's... he was a pelican.
Yes, that's it. That's the animal he was. He was a pelican scooping the water in. Oh, it was so weird. It made me very uncomfortable, which is probably the point. But
the armpit hair and him drinking water strangely.
He's a weird dude. Weird dude. Okay, so he talks to the mom about that she is dating the theater guy. All right, so they go on their dates, and they're really cute. I mean, it looks like they're really having fun at the festival. And then they go back to the house, and she's like, okay, just give me 20 minutes to freshen up, and I'll be down. And then she takes a bath.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to take a bath in 20 minutes? It takes 20 minutes to fill up the tub.
Yeah.
And then she comes downstairs and he's in her house. He's like, oh,
yeah, that was creepy.
I thought, you know, I didn't want to wait any longer. I'm like, okay, so you just let yourself in. And again, to the point, why wasn't her door locked?
Yeah, well, also, like, there are some behaviors that he exhibits that I do not think are completely okay.
No, no.
He does not appreciate her boundaries at all.
No.
And I think we're supposed to believe he's a nice guy because he, you know, contrasted to this other one, you know.
But he still has some issues controlling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know if we're there yet, but that scene on the stairs where he does not stop immediately when she says no. She has to, like, get really upset and shove him off and start crying.
Right. Yeah. She says, please, please get off. Please stop. Please, and then keeps saying, and then finally he does. And
then she goes and apologizes to him later.
Well, she apologizes to him right then.
Yeah.
And he's like, God, what did he do to you?
Yeah. That made me so mad.
It doesn't matter what he did to her. She said no.
Yes. So that reminds me of when I was in college. Mm-hmm. There was this guy that was trying to make out with me, and I did not want to. And I was just like, no, I don't want to. And he decided that it was because I had been abused.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so it was the same kind of thing where he's just like, what happened to you? And I'm like, I just don't want to kiss you.
Yeah, just because a woman says no doesn't mean that there's something horrid in her past or something wrong with her. She just may not like you. Simple as that. Or she might like you and just doesn't want to make out right then.
Right. Exactly. By pushing the issue, you're probably going to push it one way.
Yeah.
Just probably not the one that you want. So.
Yeah. You're probably going to lose your chance anyway. So was there anything else you want to talk about before we talk about the end?
I don't think so.
Okay. The end comes. And like the critic said, you know, it was the jump scare is a little predictable. And why do it when it's not really necessary? Which, I mean, it really wasn't. He's already tormented her enough, and to just point the gun at her and then have it not go off, it was not necessarily worth it.
No.
what I really didn't get was after the police have been called, after he's been shot, and then she goes over and holds Ben, it goes and zooms out and you see the husband laying on the floor, and then you see her wedding ring on the floor too, which, I mean, I get it. Sure. Okay. That's fine. But then they have the ring twinkle. And it's not just a twinkle. They have the sound too, like ting, ting.
Like, what's the message here?
Yes.
The magic was in the ring all along.
Take it to Mordor. I don't. I was like, well, what is the significance of
take
this?
It to Mordor. Melt that thing down. PDQ.
Yeah, it was an odd choice because it almost made me feel like it was supposed to be a happy moment. Seeing him dead. I mean, like, yes, we're relieved that she doesn't have to go through this anymore, but it was like,
sorry, I can't stop laughing.
I just don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. It does send mixed messages, I think. Mixed messages.
Overall, your thoughts on this movie?
Well, I mean, I kind of voiced them already, but I enjoyed it mostly because of Julia Roberts. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she just makes a lot of really interesting choices.
Every time she cries.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, I just want to punch everything around her.
Yeah. Just want to make it okay for her.
But yeah, like, I feel like a lot of it was very predictable. And there were just certain things that didn't sit well with me. And not just, you know, the abuse or whatever. It just didn't feel right.
Anything specific or things that we've already covered?
Things that we already covered. Just, you know, I agree with the critics.
That's fair. I mean, when I watch this movie, I don't watch it for its amazing story. I watch it because, I mean, one, I have a fascination with stalker stories.
Yeah.
But also, she's just so fun to watch.
She is. She is just a joy to watch.
And it's always nice when she, one thing we did not talk about is she did not need a man to save her. She did save herself.
She saved herself. And that was a really great choice for this movie.
Yes. I mean, Ben tried to save the day, but
very easily was tossed aside because it was always meant for her.
Yes, it was always meant for her. And I love that in the end, it's, you know, female power and female strength and her finding herself and finding her own strength to stand up against her fears, which is something he mentioned, her husband mentioned at the beginning, is we can't just run from what we're afraid of. And that's the only thing that he says in this movie that is actually sound advice. It's what she ends up doing is she has to face her fears because the whole movie is her running from everything, from Ben, from her husband. It's really nice to see this character and Julia's portrayal of this character shine so well at the end.
I agree. Well, I had one more thought.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Go fast. So I remembered something that is one of those things that I just felt didn't feel right. There's all this buildup to him finding her, and you know it's going to happen. And I feel like that climax happened very quickly. And there was not very much verbal exchange between the two of them, or even a whole lot of action either. It's just kind of like, he was there, he threatened her, she got upset, Ben came in, she killed him. You know, it was bam, 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 over. Tinkle.
Tink. Yeah, it did happen pretty quickly. I don't think it needed to be longer, though. I mean, it would have been maybe more interesting for him to play more mind games with her.
That's kind of what I was feeling. Or have more to say to her to try to bring her down.
Mm-hmm.
And she rebels against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Felt like it just wasn't quite the satisfying ending that I was expecting.
Well, and I think that that's what the critics thought it was missing as compared to Stepfather, because apparently Stepfather used more of those tropes, more of the mind games and more subtlety and nuance to creep you out. And this one, it was just a quick build and then it was over. I mean, she saw the towels twice and she checked the drawer, the cupboard twice. But, you know, those were all within 10 minutes of each other towards the end of the show. So right. I get that. And that probably would have made this a stronger film. But he, as we've learned throughout the movie, he was not really subtle.
Right.
I mean, when he found out that she was dead, he threw a statue through a window. You know, he was not nuanced. So
no, I guess you're right. Yeah.
So I don't think that he would wait. I mean, he was waiting until she was home for good for the night, as opposed to the 20-minute bath.
Right.
But yeah, it could have been a longer build, but I don't think that that was in tune with his character.
Okay, that's fair.
But I get it. I get it. And I understand why the critics felt that way, too. But now I would like to read the quotes from Julia.
Okay.
So this is coming off of Pretty Woman. She had just had this amazing career exploding movie, Pretty Woman. And she said that she didn't expect the success of Pretty Woman. It just kept getting bigger and bigger. And I kept getting phone calls. It was nice, but I had a very intense focus on what I was going to do at the time. Filming Sleeping with the Enemy. And I chose that project because I look for something that moves me, that I have to be a part of. And it was difficult. But after all, it's just a movie. You have to keep that in perspective. When I go home after a wrap, there's no one home waiting for me to be afraid of. It's a fictional story about a very real problem. I don't think it makes any great statement. It shows the story of one particular person in a very common situation. And I just love that. Even at a young age, and it would be nice to always have this option, but not everybody gets this option, where she can pick and choose what projects she does.
Yeah.
And she chooses to do something that actually means something to her and could mean something to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are fortunate that we aren't in a relationship like what she dealt with, but very many people are. And to have this be something that they can watch and potentially find some sort of solace or community or strength in means something. And
yeah,
she wanted to do it for that reason. And I very much admire that. Like I said, not everybody gets that option to just do something because they feel compelled to. A lot of people, if they have an offer, they just have to take it. They can't say, no, I'd rather do this project that may not make as much money, but means something.
Yeah.
So that being said, I do want to go ahead and give out the domestic violence hotline number one more time, which is 1-800-799-7233. 1-800-799-7233. So if you are in a situation and you need help, that is the number that you can call, and hopefully you can find some relief. That's all I have. I know that we talked more about the movie as a whole than Julia in this episode.
But I think it was kind of important to talk about the journey of this character.
Yes. She does such a good job playing the fear and the strength and the caution. I mean, she has so many emotions in this film and they're so beautiful. Every time.
Yes.
It's just beautiful to watch her, honestly. Mm-hmm. Even if you hate this movie, it's still, just watching her reactions is well worth it.
Yeah, it's worthwhile just for Julia Roberts.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else you would like to say before we close out?
No, I don't think so. It was great. I enjoyed it. Oh, next time. We are doing romantic comedy. Ha ha, we finally made it here. We do Julia Roberts and we do drama and we do thriller and we do fantasy. But what way? It's Julia Roberts. We're going to do romantic comedy.
Yeah, it would be kind of a travesty if we did not cover at least one of her romantic comedies. So Bailey is going to be doing... I think we should say, just in case people want to watch it before we
have our episodes. Okay, all right. So we'll no longer leave it a surprise.
Yeah.
We are going to do Pretty Woman.
Naturally.
That's the obvious choice. And there's a lot of really good ones out there, but this is a really important one.
And I'm very, very excited. Oh, the water fountain just shot him in the eye, by the way. He got his comeuppance.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about Pretty Woman, and I can't wait to hear all the stuff that you find about it, because I'm sure that that's going to be a fun research project.
Yes, I agree. And I'll try to make it interesting.
Yeah, we're just trying our best.
We're just doing our best.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of America's Sweethearts.
I'm Bailey.
And I'm Chaney.
And goodbye.
Later.